the two guys we added here tonight. You know, Carnell Tate, we thought he was the best receiver in the draft. And then coming back up and getting Keldrick Falk, who, really fits his defense. I mean, long, can play outside, inside. Looking back to some of Saleh's defenses, too, it reminded me a little bit of Armstead when he had him there in San Francisco. Really excited about adding these two guys here tonight. Great character guys, too.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast live. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey. And joining me, as always, the managing editor of Titan Size, publisher of NFL Draft on SI, author of at least 500 draft articles since yesterday, my co-host, the Yada Yada King, Justin Mello. How's it going? Night one of the draft in the books, day two on deck here in just a few hours, and the Titans shock all of us, first with their pick at number 4 overall, but then really taking us by surprise by trading back up from pick 35 into the first round at pick 31 to take Auburn defensive end Keldrick Falk. Justin, we have hardly talked about Keldrick Falk throughout this process, so now is a great day for us to break him down. I want to start with Carnell Tate, but I should ask you, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well, because that was a heck of an intro. And of course I'm doing well, because round one of the NFL draft is in the books, and I'm pumped. I'm pumped. You know, a lot of good work done. I was excited about what I put out, Titan Size, NFL Draft SI, seeing the interview series, come to fruition, if you will, with all these guys getting picked. More importantly, I'll say this. I was exhausted last night when I saw the Titans were on the clock at 31. And I went, oh no, I've got so much more to do now. I was like, no. I won't lie. Part of me was like, no. How many hours of sleep, Hershey asked me. I think around 5-ish. I went to bed around 1. And I said, I'm not going to get up too early. But I got up at 6:30 anyway. Because that's just... I think it's built into my body now. And I went, what did I do? Logged on straight to Titan Sized and wrote 2 Keldrick Falk stories. One just went live 15 minutes ago. Another one going live at 1 p.m. Got some really good quotes we went out and got from Auburn experts, guys who know Auburn really well and the NFL draft. And I built some stories around the quotes that I got from an NFL draft scout and a Auburn expert. So check out Titan Size. Check out those Keldrick Falk stories. I think they're really, really good. Before I go on, you got to hit the thing, Justin Graver.
Wait, hang on. I want to set up the episode real quick. So today we're going to talk about these two picks, obviously. I want to break down really what Carnell Tate does best, why he's such a help for Cam Ward. And there was a story told on the Speakeasy podcast that indicates that Carnell Tate was the Titans guy all along, that even if Jeremiah Love had been there at 4... Even if David Bailey had been there at pick 4, I think the Titans probably still take Carnell Tate, and I'll tell you why. And then we're going to talk about Keldrick Falk. Let's break down the trade, talk about if the Titans gave up too much to move from they moved from pick 35 to 31. They moved back from pick 66 to 69. But then they moved way back out of the fourth round entirely. Remember, they had the first pick of the fourth round, pick 101. And they moved all the way back into the 160s in the fifth round, past their other 2 fifth round picks. So a huge move there. Was it worth it? We're going to break that down. Before we get there, Justin, yes. Oh my goodness gracious. We have a super chat from DaBeta303. Call me crazy, but this sets the Titans up better than if they would have went Reese. Reese is all about upside and if he can develop. Sounds like Falk 2. Difference is about 25 picks. I do think Reese has a higher floor. I mean, depending on how you view it, because he can play inside linebacker, which is where the Giants have said they're going to play him at inside linebacker. The Giants took an inside linebacker and a guard with 2 top 10 picks, Justin, based on what they've said they're going to do with these guys.
I don't know about that.
I do think Keldrick Falk has a decently high floor as well because of his ability to play the run and to play inside and out. Like, he's a useful, versatile piece, even if he never becomes a star or a big-time game wrecker. But I do think, like, the receivers that you would have gotten, even at pick 31, there's only one left. It's Denzel Boston. So the Titans, if they hadn't taken Tate at 4, could have traded back up to 31 in the same spot, I guess, and taken Boston. Like, they could have taken the same two positions, but at the other two spots in the draft. But they didn't. I mean, what do you think of that question? And then we have another super chat.
Sorry, what do I think of the initial question?
Yeah.
Well, you took it off the screen, so give me a second here as I go back up to it. I mean, listen, they obviously wanted to help Cam Ward with that pick, right? Like, they go wide receiver ahead of Arvell Reese. I agree. Arvell Reese, the Giants claiming he's an off-ball linebacker now, doesn't mean the Titans saw it the same way. But for some reason, that removed a little of the... If you had any disappointment whatsoever, which I didn't because I love flashy skill players and investing in your young quarterback. But if you had any disappointment, I think hearing that the Giants are going to play him at linebacker, I was kind of like, oh, okay. And I just kind of like, whatever. Glad we got a wide receiver instead of a potential off-ball linebacker.
Yeah, it's really, it's telling what the league thinks of Arvell Reese, that he didn't get drafted until pick 5, and that the team who finally stopped his fall, if you will, even though it's only 5 picks, doesn't want to play him at edge. So really interesting there. A couple more super chats to hit, Justin, then we're going to get into the show. Oh my goodness gracious. Scott Duncan. What's up, boys? I listen to your replays every night at work, but first time hearing you live. Thanks for all you do. Really appreciate your insight. Scott, we really appreciate you. We really appreciate your support for the show. We're glad you could make it here to today's live stream.
Awesome.
Thanks for
here,
the tip. And another one here.
Oh my goodness gracious.
From X Factor. Great job, Justin's. Always look forward to your takes on Titans happenings. X Factor, thank you for supporting the channel. So, Justin, I think the biggest takeaway for me coming out of round one, aside from the fact that the Titans made that crazy move to move back up for Falk, is that they came out of the first round at the end of the day, after all the talk about premium positions and throw positional value out the window for this draft, the Titans come away with two premium positions, a wide receiver and an edge. In that first round, they get that surplus value on the contract if these guys turn into big-time productive players. You know, the goal with a pick at wide receiver 4 is that Carnell Tate eventually becomes the highest-paid wide receiver in football. Will he reach that height? I don't know. Is he Corey Davis all over again? I don't know. We'll talk about that in a moment. But then you come back up to 31 to get Falk, who, again, if he hits his ceiling, is also a $30 to $40 million a year player at worst, that you're getting now at the 31st pick value, plus you got the fifth-year option on both guys. If you think about it, and despite everything that we've been saying for months, it's pretty good strategy roster construction-wise from an allocation of resources standpoint.
I'm going to take this time to pat myself on the back, and I'm probably going to get loud, so I hope the guy who said his wife said I'm angry is here to hear me get loud. I'm not angry. I'm just loud. I don't want revisionist history. Call me out on it. Comments, Graver, call me out on it if you think it's revisionist history. No, and no offense to you, obviously. When you first got on the Jeremiah Love hype train, okay, I don't know how many times, and you know I did, I said on this show, word for word, verbatim, I don't know that Mike Borgonzi is not a positional value guy. I'm not convinced that he's not a positional value guy. I think I said it 5 times, okay? I even remember making the point of, and it might sound silly, I said, he sounds to me, he's a true football guy, an old school GM. Those guys, when they're football through and through, they typically are positional value guys. After experiencing 2 first rounds of the Mike Borgonzi experience, 1 second round, he has gone quarterback, edge defender, wide receiver, edge defender. With the first 4 picks he has made in the second rounds he's been in charge, first, second round he's been in charge of. Mike Borgonzi is a premium position guy. Okay? I do believe in using that route to build your roster construction, what you just said at the end there, I do believe in that. How many times, furthermore, did I come on here and say, edge defenders and wide receiver, going into this offseason, how many times did I say, and I know yesterday I said, I even said verbatim, I think, at yesterday's morning show, I could see them skipping out on wide receiver, but I wouldn't agree with it, okay? We convinced ourselves of Wandale Robinson, everyone they have, Calvin Ridley, the sophomore guys, they might have wide receivers to get by. I always said, yeah, I could see it. I don't like it. And I'm glad Mike Borgonzi didn't like it either. You've got a quarterback you're invested in, number one overall pick. You've got to invest in Cam Ward, okay? And they, what did I, how many times did I say they don't have a guy that could play out there, that could play X? I know he's not the, you know, the Denzel Boston prototype X, but I do believe he can play X. I believe he's, I mean, the Titans don't have, listen, the Titans don't have a lot of physicality in that room, so it's not saying much. He is already better suited to play X than anybody else on the roster. Certainly more so than Calvin Ridley, Shimmeray, DK, or Wandale Robinson.
Yeah, the only argument you can make is that Elik Iemanner is equally as suited, but you can't even compare them from a skill, talent, prospect, blue chip versus, I mean, Carnell Tate was a five-star recruit. You can't even begin to compare them from that angle. And every time the X conversation came up, I feel like we did do a good job, one of us, of saying, by the way, Carnell Tate could be your X. I mean, we're not talking enough about this guy potentially being the guy, but yes, that is a huge point.
He can play the X. I imagine he will play the X in this offense, completes the wide receiver room. I feel way better about the room today than I did yesterday. I wasn't understanding this whole they're fine at wide receiver. Not when you're invested in a number one overall quarterback. They had a below league average wide receiver room. I don't know that it's excellent now, but it's a lot better than it was. Okay, that's point number one. Number two, I also said multiple times throughout this summer that edge was still a huge need. In fact, I'm going to it right now. I published an article. You don't believe me. Music City Miracles. I published an article yesterday.
Everyone believes you, Justin. Everyone believes you. But yes, continue.
Yesterday morning, I'm pulling it up because I can't help myself. Tennessee Titans, top five needs in round one. I had edge rusher number one on the list. I didn't understand the sentiment that they were good at edge. They rolled the, why? Because they rolled the dice on Jermaine Johnson, who's on a one-year contract and was, you know, so-so last year. And because John Franklin Myers might play out there occasionally, and Jacob Martin and Femio, no, edge was a huge need. It's a premium position. Premium position. They go wide receiver, edge, Keldrick Falk. I want to talk a lot more about Keldrick Falk, but I want to end the rant now. End the rant. I said all offseason, wide receiver, edge. That's where they go in the first round. Mike Borgonzi is a premium position guy. Great chance they go Carnell Tate ahead of Jeremiah Love, even if Love is on the board, because we're certain that Mike Borgonzi wanted a receiver and that he likes premium positions.
Yep, I'm going to pick up on that bead as soon as we hit these. Oh my goodness gracious.
Got two.
Super chats. Elliot says, love the content, Justin's. Keep doing your thing. Audible Army UK. Excited to see what Borgonzi does the rest of the draft. Shout out to you, Elliot, coming from across the pond.
We have so many Audible Army members in the UK. I love it, man.
I know. We could take over the crown, Justin. Oh, my goodness gracious. Corbin Crosby with a $5 super chat. No Love sucks, but I'm pumped for Tate time in Tennessee. I saw somebody in the Titans fan section pit when the pick was announced and Tate went over to that section at the draft to take a picture, had a sign that said Tatum up. And I thought that was pretty good.
Did they make that before the draft? No way.
I don't know. That's what I was wondering. I was like, did this guy bring the marker and write this out after the pick was announced? Or was he just a huge Tate fan? Or did somebody from the Titans who knew what the pick was going to be like, for the picture, put this sign in here. You can hold this sign now. Justin, I'm going to pick up on what you were just talking about. Carnell Tate was the guy all along. Carnell Tate was the guy all along. Jeremiah Love could have made it to four. David Bailey could have made it to four. Arvell Reese and Sonny Styles did make it to four. The Titans didn't take either of those guys, obviously. Here is TJ Houshmandzadeh, who was on the Speakeasy podcast, Emmanuel Acho's new show after he got canned by Fox Sports for some, you know, illicit off-field stuff. This is TJ Houshmandzadeh, who says that Brian Daboll called him during the lead up to the draft to get his advice and ask him about Carnell Tate. Here is TJ Houshmandzadeh.
I talked to Brian Daboll about a month ago.
Okay.
for about 45 minutes. And I go to the text message and I'll show you guys. And then I talked with Carnell Tate about it and just kind of let him know. And he just asked me my opinion on what I would do and who I would draft and who did I like. And he was like, I just value your opinion so much. We talked. And I came away from that conversation saying, they gonna draft Carnell Tate. And I called Carnell Tate and I told him that.
I mean, that's pretty telling that they were doing their research. Now, I read a story about Brian Daboll when the Titans hired him. Actually, I think I was researching him as either a head coach or OC option when I read this story. About them acquiring Stephon Diggs in Baltimore ahead of the 2020 season when Josh Allen really broke out. How Brian Daboll called a bunch of people who had coached Stephon Diggs before just to get an idea of what he was like, because there were those rumors that he was sort of a locker room nuisance and stuff in Minnesota. There was that famous video, we play a clip from it on Heed the Call all the time, of all of the somebody on the social team for Minnesota going around to every player in the locker room and saying, who's the one guy in here you would not let date your sister? And they all said Stephon Diggs. And then it goes to Diggs and he's like, what, nobody want me to date their sister? I'm a great guy. But anyway, Daboll did his research on Diggs and after talking to people felt comfortable with him. Obviously, they trade for Diggs. He breaks out. You know, I mean, he was already a great receiver in Minnesota, but took it to another level in Buffalo, took Josh Allen to another level. So this is a historical trend for Daboll to have an interest in a player and then start calling around to get other opinions and get reassurance or whatever it may be. The fact that they were doing that about Carnell Tate and that Houshmandzadeh came away from that conversation thinking they really like that guy, they are probably going to draft that guy, tells you a lot about where they were at a month ago in the process when the whole world was convinced they were taking Jeremiah Love, including me and my visions. So that's a really interesting, it seems like he was their guy, which I think if you're taking him with that much conviction, as opposed to, oh, he's our consolation prize because the guy we wanted didn't actually make it to us, that makes me feel even more comfortable with the pick. And I want to break down more about Carnell Tate, but this part of the conversation is pretty interesting to me.
Yeah, incredibly. I mean, interesting that Daboll, by the way, values TJ Houshmandzadeh's opinion that much. Yeah. It's interesting. It's a 45-minute conversation about the wide receiver. I'm going to guess, I mean, I haven't seen that. I don't know if you've seen more than that. I'm going to guess Houshmandzadeh really likes Carnell Tate, watched him on film and said, yeah, I probably told Daboll, I think this is a really good wide receiver prospect.
And shout out to Tyler of Locked On Titans for tweeting that clip out and bringing it to my attention in the first place. So shout out to you, Tyler. Sorry, continue.
That certainly indicates that it was probably Carnell Tate all along, even if Jeremiah Love was on the board.
Yeah. So Carnell Tate, I said this last night. I can't remember if I said this on our show or if I only said this on Heed the Call. I might have said it in both places. I can't remember now. I might have only said it here. Who knows, Justin? Live chat, let me know if I said this last night. I think the Carnell Tate can't get yak stuff got overblown throughout the process, because when you're watching him on film for real, watching every snap, Carnell Tate is not the easiest film watch. And by that, I mean, he only had, what, 891 receiving yards last year, which is a good number of yards, but it's not, you know, there's guys in this class with 1,100, 1,200, 1,300 receiving yards. When you watch those guys on tape, there's just more plays because they're compiling more yards. So with Carnell Tate, the yak stuff feels a little, it doesn't happen as often as maybe you'd like to see it, because he's just not targeted as frequently as most guys who go fourth overall at wide receiver. But if you just watch a highlight reel, you'd come away from that thinking, why are people saying this guy doesn't pick up yards after catch? This guy, every highlight, he's picking up tons of yards after the catch. He chews up ground. He has a good vision for where the space is in a defense. His only real issue with picking up yards after the catch is that, again, he doesn't really break tackles that often. He's not bouncing off defenders. He's not like A.J. Brown scoring that touchdown against the Ravens where he ran through nine guys. You know, that's not his strength. But that doesn't mean that he can't be a wide receiver one. And maybe this is like, okay, the Titans drafted this guy, so now we're going to start hyping him up as a wide receiver one. Maybe there's a little bit of inherent bias built into this take, just I can't help it as a Titans fan and analyst. But you guys want to hear the most positive outlook possible, right? that his archetype of wide receiver can still be a wide receiver one. And a bunch of comparisons that have been thrown around already are, and I said this yesterday without knowing that people were doing this comp, Devontae Adams and DeAndre Hopkins. He's got massive hands, doesn't drop the ball. I undersold his contested catch rate on last night's show, Justin. It was over 85% last season. He catches everything near him. DeAndre Hopkins, very similar, except I think Cardinal Tate creates a little more separation. Like, Hopkins was great at playing physical and catching through traffic, but he had to catch through traffic a lot. Cardinal Tate also catches through traffic well, but gets open. And one other comparison I'll throw at you, Justin, a guy who didn't have the fastest 40 time, maybe wasn't an amazing tackle-breaking machine when he got the ball in his hands. You know, he's not that. He's like a running back in the open field. Not that guy. How about Larry Fitzgerald as a comp for Cardinal Tate, if you're talking about reaching his absolute ceiling and why a guy of his archetype can still be a wide receiver one? There are examples of guys like that, and I think he is going to come in here, and Dable is going to craft the offense around his strengths and Cam Ward's strengths and what they both do well together, the same way that he brought Stephon Diggs in and made Diggs the focal point of that passing attack in Buffalo.
I want to read an excerpt from an article, if you don't mind. It's where I'm going to take it. But we got three Super Chat tips to hit. Three Super Chat tips to hit, if you don't mind, if you want to do the honors on those three.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
An Angry Fetus with a $10 Super Chat tip. Very generous, Angry Fetus. One of our biggest supporters here says, Cam has an answer for Pressman Blitz's high upside edge at 31. Think we can pencil in left tackle for round one next year since Borgo is addressing premium positions. I think it's a very good point, Angry Fetus, and we know it's probably going to be a pretty big need next offseason, but I don't mind waiting for it to be a need because I don't think Dan Moore is going to kill them this year, right? Dan Moore, I think, is a very serviceable left tackle. So, but good point. If you want to look ahead, now that they've done the wide receiver and edge thing this year, certainly left tackle will probably be a big one going into next summer.
My goodness gracious.
Combo Booster with the 10-pound Super Chat tip. I'm a big Tombo guy. He's always in the comments. Another UK Audible Army member checking in. Loved watching the live show at 1 a.m. through blurred eyes last night. Great show, gents, and I love the two picks. I got a question for you, Tombo. Number one, appreciate you for watching the live at 1 a.m. from overseas over there. Were you looking through blurred eyes because you were tired? Or did you have a couple too many pints at the local watering hole? I know the UK, they love their pints. Drop the comment below. I want to know, were you tired or was it the local watering hole that got to you? We've got now two more to hit.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Off-white clouds with the $4.99 Super Chat that finally I'm awake for a life. We're glad you're awake and we're glad you're here with us, Off-white clouds. Thanks for tuning in and thanks a bunch for the Super Chat tip. And then MCAs.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Number one sponsor, Gary Soto. We're one more live away from having to put up a Gary Soto banner on the pod. He's the new pharmacy burger. He's the new, what was the liquor place?
Sinkers.
Sinkers Beverages. How can I forget? He's the new Sinkers Beverages. Gary is the new pharmacy burger. Gary Soto, with his daily $50 Super Chat tip, says, F the Cardinals, but time to move on and Tatten up. Maybe it was Gary at the draft last night with the Tatten up sign. He certainly got enough deep pockets to fly to Pittsburgh and be at the draft. So, Gary, we love you. We appreciate you. You mean the world to this show.
Tombo was just tired, Justin. He's off to the pub in 30 minutes, though. Got some funny comments here. Gary saved my marriage. Music City Gary Bowl. That's a good one.
The Gary Bowl Army. I love it.
Gary can be pharmacy burger. Spizzles is Sinkers. Good one, good one, good one. All right, Dustin, we got to take an audio break, but yeah. We're going to talk more.
And then I'm going to get into the article, and then I want to talk a little Keldrick Falk.
We'll be right back. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard, and BetterHelp's latest research confirms it.
BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from actually doing so. What can we as a society do to close this gap between believing in mental health support and actually seeking it out?
Well, we can start by encouraging each other to seek support when we need it. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, you should know that BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform.
All you have to do to get started is fill out a short questionnaire, and BetterHelp takes care of matching you with a therapist. The best part? If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from any of BetterHelp's tailored recommendations.
Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. Welcome back, audio audience. Justin, take it away.
AJ Cola, who I bet almost no one here is familiar with, and I don't mean that in a negative, really, really good, underrated writer on my staff at Titan Sized. I wish he'd write more, okay? I love AJ. When I get a piece from AJ Cola, I am so excited to edit it and publish it. He was at Pro Football Focus. AJ Cola, I think, might have been one of the layoffs from Pro Football Focus. He was one of the graders. So all your grades, all the film you love, guys like AJ are in the background, not the biggest social media presence, but damn it, does he know football. And he came over to Titan Size a couple months ago. He wrote this February 16th. I published it. This NFL draft prospect has built to transform the offense overnight. And it's about Carnell Tate. And AJ Cola knows ball. I promise you, he knows ball. I'm going to try to pick out some excerpts here and not try to read the whole damn thing. First sentence. Tennessee Titans are desperate for a dominant outside presence at wide receiver. There's no better candidate than Carnell Tate. AJ Cola is a film guy through and through. Like I said, grading for Pro Football Focus, okay? What makes Tate such an intriguing option is, first and foremost, his ability at the catch point. The best pass-catching skills of any prospect I've scouted in the last 5 years. Per my grading and tracking at Pro Football Focus, you talked about the contested catch rate. 12 of 14 on contested catches, according to PFF. Dominant in this area, not just because of his size and athleticism, but because of his outstanding fundamentals. You didn't believe me when I said AJ's a film guy? He always has his thumbs together as he reaches for the ball and never clap attacks the ball. Even on targets where he has to fully extend or contort his body, his technique never wavers. Reaches his hands to make catches at the earliest possible moment, never giving defenders a chance to disrupt the play. He's also excellent at tracking difficult targets over his shoulders. However, I'm not going to read the whole thing, I promise. To be a great outside receiver, in the NFL, you need more than just great ball skills. In my opinion, what separates Tate is his ability to layer routes and vary his tempo. We've got film in this article. If you haven't read it, you should. He points out a comeback route where he doesn't just run straight to his landmark and break. He makes it look like a go route by attacking leverage and then gives a hard head fake to the inside before accelerating out of that step, forcing the corner to flip his hips and run with the vertical. Once that happens, it's a smooth break. It's a no-brainer. I think I'm going to stop right there because I could keep going and read the whole friggin' thing because it's so good. Read it if you haven't read it. AJ Cola on Carnell Tate. It's really 2 months ago and it was outstanding.
I think Carnell Tate is exactly what the Titans wide receiver room needed. I mean, we've talked a lot about that, but if you think that 4 was too early for him, the Chiefs wanted to get him.
Yeah, we've got Keg 6 in here, who's always negative when he's in here, Bob. I'm just going to be honest with you. He's always negative when he's in here. Says he would have been a great 22nd pick when we have it on record that the Commanders would have taken him at 6 and the Chiefs, who traded up to 7 to get Delane.
You have that flipped. Commanders would have taken him at 7. Chiefs traded up to 6 to take
Delane. Chiefs traded up to 6 to get Delane. Rare you get this type of insight. The Chiefs GM right here starts by saying, once Tate was gone.
Right.
Essentially telling you Tate was the first option on his board.
Yeah, I mean, there are multiple teams that have come out and said that Tate was like, or reports at least that come out indicating Tate was the guy for multiple teams. And so, look, we decided that Carnell Tate wasn't worth the fourth overall pick as a draft community like 2 months ago, and that's just been the opinion, right? Like, if Carnell Tate is a wide receiver one in the NFL, especially in this draft class that didn't have a ton of blue chip guys, then of course he can live up to the fourth overall pick. Now, there's a lot of pressure on him to come in and be the wide receiver one. You don't get taken fourth overall and not be wide receiver one on your own team. Not necessarily as a rookie, but he's got to become the wide receiver one at some point, or it was a too high of a pick, bad value. But that
doesn't
mean
he gets past number seven, right? Like either the Chiefs trade up to six to get him, or Washington takes him at seven, guaranteed.
Yes. So the Titans got their guy all along, and a guy that the NFL clearly liked more than the mock drafters and the consensus boards that had Tate ranked 10th-ish in the most consensus boards. I think that was his at or near his consensus ranking. He wasn't going all the way at 10. So, oh my goodness gracious.
Jesse Jones, 1471 with the $4.99. Very generous super chat tip. Asks, any interest in Eli Heidenreich, the Navy running back, if we take one? Happy with the first round picks, but hate the gap between picks. I've got a really late round grade on him. He's interesting to me because he caught a lot of balls at Navy. You know how Navy runs that strange offense. Like they just pretty much run the ball or throw outlet passes to the running back. So there's some positional question. Like he might be a slot receiver convert. I don't know that he's a true running back at the next level. Because he's a bit of a tweener in between, I've got a super late grade on him, like round 6-7 range, I think. But he's an intriguing player. No doubt about it that he's an intriguing player. And Graver, while you're hitting the thing, you might as well hit it once more.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Off-white clouds with his second super chat tip of the day. $4.99, very generous, says, what do you guys think the odds we can get a pick out of Will Levis? Maybe the Cardinals? I mean, I could see Will Levis being traded this weekend. It might take a pick swap. I don't know that they're going to get a pick outright for him, unless it's like a 6 or a 7. I would swap Levis and a 6th for a 5th with my eyes closed. If I can get into the 5th especially, I wouldn't even think twice. Even if I got to give a 6th back.
I think I wanted to talk about this when we got to Keldrick Faulk and the trade up and the stuff like that, but I definitely think they're going to be looking to move Levis to help compensate for now not having a 4th-round pick. Are we done talking about Carnell Tate? I mean, I think, Justin, at some point we should do a whole film breakdown on him. Like, we'll keep diving deeply into how
I
want to
do film breakdowns on both.
Yeah, me too. And we'll talk about how we expect Daboll to use him, why he's more than just a vertical winner, but why that is such an important, intriguing skill set. Creating explosive plays. Titans offense got way more explosive last night with the addition of Carnell Tate. Let's talk Keldrick Faulk, because this is a guy who, if you look at, there's a chart floating around out here now from Kevin Cole that shows the value according to mock drafts and big board consensus opinions. Keldrick Faulk was the biggest steal by multiple metrics, by consensus big board and consensus mock drafts. Keldrick Faulk was the biggest steal, the best value pick of the night, 20 years old, edge rusher out of Auburn with limited production, especially limited production this past season in 2025 when he only had 2 sacks and 4 tackles for loss, only 7 sacks a season before that. There is a usage and alignment context that needs to be added to his production. But we played it at the top when we played Mike Borgonzi's press conference clip, comparing him to Eric Armstead, who Saleh coached in San Francisco, as a guy with inside-out versatility. And a young, high upside, very traitsy pick. If there's any defensive staff in the league that we should trust to develop a raw defensive line prospect, in my opinion, it's Robert Saleh with Aaron Whitecotton. I mean, these guys have done it everywhere they've been. It's funny and interesting that the San Francisco 49ers with Saleh last year drafted Michael Williams, who has some similar traits and profile to Keldrick Faulk. I know a lot of people didn't like this pick, but I think it's silly. Like, I personally always thought of Faulk as like a project that I wasn't interested in another project because the Titans have Femi Oladejo, who's enough of a project at edge already. But when you look at the value you get for this guy, you hear him speak, you hear about his character and how he's a huge culture guy. Both of these picks, And Borgonzi said that in the intro of the show, too. Both of these picks, huge character culture guys, which that just continues a theme that Borgonzi has shown to be to care a lot about. What do you make of the Keldrick Falk pick? Horseshoe forever. Graver, you didn't like this pick, homie. I mean, in the moment, I did not like this pick. I also am not going to sit here and lie and say that I watched a ton of Keldrick Falk film. I mean, Keldrick Falk was projected to go in the 20s, right? He wasn't an option at pick 4, and he wasn't an option at pick 35. So I didn't do a ton of work on Keldrick Falk. I'm not going to lie and say that I did. Everything that I've seen about him and from people whose opinions I trust since the pick has been made, I mean, Dane Brugler had him as his third or fourth edge in the draft ahead of Mezidor. 15th overall. Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a couple things to say. First of all, I thought it was really funny. I think someone put the comment in here way earlier, and I thought the same thing. Like, taking Carnell Tate at 4 overall, to me, and I sort of felt like Robert Saleh was on board with it, but I think it showed a little bit of growth from Robert Saleh in the sense that I got fired for never figuring out the offense. We never had a good offensive unit in New York, right? Can't repeat that mistake here. Arvel Reese is on the board. I've got a young quarterback. I got to make sure I invested him. Not repeating your mistakes, right? I think the Carnell Tate pick, there's an interesting dynamic there, right? Where I think Robert Saleh understands he's got to do things a little bit differently this time around, right? Well, you come back at 31, and it's like, maybe we can get one for me. You know, that one was for us and you and Dave. This one's for me, right? And that's what I felt like when they took Keldrick Falk at 31. Eric Armstead comparisons, Michael Williams comparisons, as you mentioned, both coached by Saleh in San Francisco. I'm so glad that you mentioned the context, okay? 7 sacks in 2024 at Auburn, stellar number. What do guys do? They tend to get better, right? So I think everyone's expecting him to take this huge step in 2025, maybe be a 10-sack guy, super talented, a lot of natural ability. Well, he regresses in the statistical department, right? 2 sacks, tackles for loss. They played him almost all year at the 4-eye, okay? What do you know about 4-eye as well as I know, Graver? Not exactly conducive, right, for a super high pass rush win rate, which, by the way, is one of the negatives I've seen on him. If you go to PFF, you go wherever, you find his pass rush win rate, it's low, okay? The context to that, he's playing 4-eye. You're not going to be a pass rush win rate merchant when you're playing that position. When 4-eyes tend to get, by the way, a lot of, you know, pass rushing production pressure, it's hard to do it without twists, stunts, games up front, right? Titans, I know, you know, we got a new head coach, so we'll see. But Robert Saleh has run a lot of that. The Titans have run a lot of that, like with Jeffrey Simmons throughout the years. If they do still want to play him at 4-eye and kind of, and you know, run those stunts games, help bump up those numbers, they could do it. What I don't agree necessarily. I didn't love that Auburn played him so much at the 4-eye because it hurt his numbers, because it hurt the pass rushing win rate in production. But I also think, you know, he's selfless. I think he's willing to do it. It falls in line with what we know about his character, what we've learned about his character. And what are some of the traits that you need to have to thrive at the 4-eye? You need to be a really good run defender. You need to be long. You need to be strong, right? Early down guy. We know that that's who he was. He was willing to play that selfless role for the betterment of the team because he was really good at it. Daniel Caribbean's got the number. He only played 60% of snaps outside the tackle, right? When you're, some people have asked about the 4-eye. When you're playing 4-eye, you're playing on the inside shoulder, right? So he played a lot of 4-eye this past year. I think it hurt the numbers. When you are 6'6", 285, you play 6'6", 285, and you've got 34-inch arms, and you're 20 years old, and you're not going to be 21 until September. You know what I mean? And the traits that are there, and this guy is selfless, and you feel strongly that maybe he was misused or the numbers were being were hurt by the context a little bit, then that's why you feel super strongly about this guy. Natural fit for Robert Saleh. I'm out of breath. Back to you, Graver. Hershey's been asking about 4-eye. Maybe you can help address that for him. Back to you.
Yeah, I think you covered it. But It is the alignment that is shading inside the tackle. So this here, if we're watching this tape on screen, sorry for the audio audience, he's lined up as a 7 or a 9 tech in most of these clips here because he's rushing from the end spot. That is a 7 technique, the tackle 79 on his, to his, you know, he's outside the tackle shoulder there. Wide 9 would be outside where the tight end aligns. This is a 4-eye alignment. It's in between, sort of, it's sort of over the tackle but shaded to the inside. This is a 7 tech alignment. Here, I'm waiting for a clip to play where he's hit the 4-eye so we can just show it instead of having to describe it. But it doesn't look like that's coming. Keep scrolling for more. I wanted to find this tweet from Mike. Tremendous value here with Falk, who fell further than I think anyone really had him going. Extremely young player, won't turn 21 till September, who is still developing as a pass rusher, but has tremendous length and is already a plus run defender.
He's such a part good of the run reason. Defender.
Part of the reason for Falk's pass rush numbers being just so-so is directly related to how he was used at Auburn, playing a ton of 4-eye, which is not an easy technique to rack up pressures or sacks from, similar to Josh Sweat coming out of FSU a few years ago in that sense. And Keldrick Falk, during his press conference after the pick, when he did a Zoom with Titans Media, said he thinks he's only reached or tapped into 40% of his potential and what he can be. Talked a lot about how he needs to play with a lower pad level, how playing out of a three-point stance versus a two-point stance helps him have a lower pad level, how the two-gapping scheme run defense at Auburn kind of forces you to play with a lower pad level. And then when he would rush the passer from the outside alignment standing up on third downs, now he's standing up. So his pad level's higher, and he said he recognized he needs to get better at that. I love that he said he's only reached 40% of his potential. And he's like, I'm excited to tap into that other 60%. We do have a super chat here.
I think
Justin,
we got two. I think you might have missed one before this one as well.
AI. Purpose over pleasure. Keldrick Falk will be a backup JFM. Even though he will play edge on rundowns and inside on pass downs, that is the exact role for JFM. Drafted a role player that has potential to grow. I mean, you know, good teams don't necessarily are always starting their first-round picks. Now, the Titans are not a good team, and they will definitely be starting their first-round picks.
And I expect them to be on the field together, though. Like, they're going to play a lot together.
Yeah, that's the thing. They can both align inside or outside on early downs. They can both pop in or out on pass-rushing downs. You can keep offensive lines guessing. And you were right, Justin, there was a second one. Oh, my goodness gracious. Beard Zerker, I need to put this out there as a Buckeye fan. I'm excited. Tate started his freshman year in a room with Marvin Harrison Jr. and Emeka Egbuka. He has been a monster since his freshman year. Another dominant OSU wide receiver, I promise. I agree with this from the standpoint of Carnell Tate got to Ohio State and started playing as a freshman up with the best receiver room in the entire nation with multiple guys who have already been first round picks and a bunch of guys who are going to be first round picks. I mean, Ohio State's had a wide receiver drafted in the first round for 4 straight years. It's going to be 5 next year when Jeremiah Smith goes first overall, potentially, at least first round for sure. And a top 10, top 5, top 3. I mean, how Jeremiah Smith's not getting out of the top 3, I don't think. And all of those guys have been good. Even Marvin Harrison Jr. has been good for an NFL receiver. He hasn't been 4th overall pick good, which is exactly obviously where Carnell Tate just got selected. So you'd hope that he has a better start to his career, at least, than Marvin Harrison Jr. did. But these guys don't miss. The OSU receivers do not miss. Oh my goodness gracious.
The Audible Army UK is out in full force. We've got a 2-pound super chat tip from Alex R. 5510. Value in trading into the second today. We need interior linemen. I do think the Titans are going to be active on the trade market in terms of trading picks up and down the board because of that huge gap that they now have following the Falk trade. I do think they're going to be active, and I have a feeling they're going to find a way to close that gap, even if it has to mean they give up one pick to come back a little higher up. I think there's a good chance. So good question, Alex. Expect them to be active. And, of course, expect them to target interior linemen today and tomorrow.
While we're talking about that, let's talk about what the Titans gave up to get Keldrick Falk. So they gave up picks 35, 66, and 101. They got back 31, 69, and 165. That is a 35-ish point difference on the point value trade value point chart. Which is about equivalent to a 5th-round pick. So the Titans give up essentially a 5th-round pick to get Keldrick Falk, but the difference is they didn't give up a fifth round pick because they didn't give up any picks because they actually still have the same number of picks that they had before making the trade and the same number of top 100 picks, although 101 is just missing that cutoff there and you don't have that anymore. So they did pay a little bit of a premium, which you would expect to pay moving from the second round to the first round. That fifth year option is worth 35.6 points on the trade value chart. Zach Lyons, whose tweet I'm showing on the screen here, breaking this down, didn't like the trade because they lost out on that value. But I think that's just the premium you should expect to pay if you're moving from 2 to 1 and getting that fifth year option. It is going to be a long wait from 69 to 165, nearly 100 picks, no fourth rounder. But I think Will Levis is on the block. I think you now have 3 fifth-round picks and 2 sixth-round picks.
Yep.
You can move around with those picks. There may not be teams that want to move back that far and take on a bunch of day 3 picks, but maybe there will be. You don't know what teams are going to want to do. Obviously, it takes 2 to tango. Just smash 53.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Says, Falk reminds me of Richard Seymour. Fair comp, Mello?
Well, I'm going to answer this question. I think it might be Mike Vrabel's burner account, Just Smash 53 over here, asking this question. Interesting comp. I mean, am I misremembering? I feel like Richard Seymour was more of a dominant inside guy. I feel like Falk is going to play way more outside than Richard Seymour did. But, I mean, big, long, strong, there are some similarities. But I think Falk is more of an outside guy. In my opinion, can I quickly shout out, because it's hilarious, and I'm going to tell on myself. Brandon Loray, a buddy of mine who works, you saw the tweet, I guess, for Blogging the Boys. He writes for Dallas Cowboys SB Nation site.
He tagged
months
us
ago. Okay, I talked to Brandon a lot through the DM. Months ago, when Keldrick Falk had his pro day, he found a photo of Aaron Whitecotton. Look at, like, what's the date on this tweet? Do you have the date? So March 27th, a month before the draft. Of Aaron Whitecotton looking at Keldrick Falk, Titans D-line coach, with love in his eyes, and he poses this scenario where the Titans trade back into the first round for Keldrick Falk, okay? Brandon sent this to me through DM and said, what do you think? And I disregarded it, said, the Titans don't, like, they want picks. They don't want to give up picks. I was, you know, picturing that they're coming back into the first from 35. You'd have to lose a pick to do it. I don't think so. They like picks. They're not giving up picks to do anything. Shout out to Brandon. Oh, like, are you kidding me? This is almost up there with the guy who predicted Marcus Mariota was going to throw a touchdown pass to himself in the Chiefs playoff game. I'm glad Brandon got his flowers because this tweet went crazy yesterday. It's now done a whole bunch of impressions, way more today than it did the day he tweeted it. That's really, really something.
Mike Borgonzi said Keldrick Falk was the top player on their board there. He was asked directly, did you not think he would make it to 35? I don't think, to me, as much about making it to 35 or not making it to 35, because you pick him at 35, you don't get a fifth-year option, and a guy who's only 20 years old, going to be 21 in September.
He might not make it, right? Like, I don't know that he's going to make it to 35.
I don't know that he was or wasn't, and I don't know that it matters, because you're taking a chance on a guy hitting his ceiling or hitting his worth as a starting edge in the NFL with versatility to play inside or outside, up and down the defensive line, with a lot of physical traits and athleticism, that if he does play well as a rookie, as a sophomore in his third year, he's going to be eligible for an extension by the end of his third year. But if he's playing really well and you want to push that extension at all, I mean, you get the fifth year option by trading up. And if, again, he's got to hit, the pick's got to hit. But if he does, you get that huge value surplus in the contract game. So I think that the trade up to 31 was less about him making it to 35 and more about getting that fifth-year option. And they basically gave up their fourth-round pick to do so. And again, of course, they picked up an extra fifth-round pick. I wanted to hit this question on that topic because Jabba Chunk says, what do y'all think Levis is worth pick-wise? Like, not much, to be totally honest, depending on how desperate teams are. Like, the Cardinals don't have a viable starting quarterback. I guess Gardner Minshew is. Jacoby Brissett's currently holding out, wants a new contract or something. Whatever leverage Jacoby Brissett thinks he has, he got more of it last night when the Rams took Ty Simpson. I think if you want a fourth-round pick, you could trade Levis and a fifth for a fourth. pretty easy. Like, that seems pretty fair to me as a way to get up into the fourth round without having to package all your fifth round and sixth round picks together, or even multiple of them. Levis in a fifth for a fourth? I'm making that trade all day, Justin. Would you do that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like I said, to me, Will Levis is adding nothing to this team anymore, right? Like, I mean, he's the quarterback three, so anything that you could flip for Will Levis and get another pick, another dart throws, a position that's going to be offer a lot more value than a QB3 does. A backup guard offers more value than QB3, right? Like a backup, a fourth cornerback. So whatever you can get for Will Levis with that pick, and maybe that guy ends up being really good. You never know. I would absolutely pull the trigger on something like that this weekend. Should we?
Aaron Grizz doesn't think anyone will want to trade for Levis, but I think the Jets and the Cardinals are both potential options. I would have said the Rams, but they just picked Ty Simpson, obviously, so they don't need another fourth quarterback. Would you do Levis and a third for a second? I would. I don't think you're going to find an NFL GM willing to be on the other end of that deal.
Would I date Jennifer Lopez Atlas? Yes, I would. I don't know that. Yeah, there's no way in heck they're getting that kind of option.
We don't know that Will Levis stinks, by the way, because every quarterback who played under a Brian Callahan head coached team stunk massively and was better without him than with him. So I have a big point to make, Justin. We got to take our second break here. We'll be right back. We're going to do two more things when we come back from the break, because we don't want to make this too long of a show, but we had a lot to talk about with this trade. Is I want to pitch my theory on how the Titans are building this defensive front, because I think it's pretty interesting and also very smart. And then we're going to quickly talk about what could happen at pick 69. Be right back. All right, welcome back, everybody. Here we go. So here's my theory. So you talk about Keldrick Fox ceiling. And to me, I don't think this guy is ever going to be a 10-sack, 12-sack guy. He's not that kind of dominant edge. If you want to use Eric Armstead as a comp, you know, his average season is around 6 sacks, 10 or so tackles for loss, playing run defense, sliding inside for pass rushing downs, letting JFM play on the outside on those downs, or JFM sets the edge on the early downs with Falk playing run defense from that 4-I spot, and then Falk's the one bumping out on pass rushing downs. But they have a lot of guys that are going to get snaps at the end spot from Jermaine Johnson and Jacob Martin, Femi Oladejo, now Keldrick Falk, and of course, John Franklin Myers and Jeffrey Simmons can bump outside and play there. Solomon Thomas has inside-out versatility as well. Jordan Elliott will be on the inside most of the time.
Jalen Harrell still on the team.
Yeah, Jalen Harrell is still a developing young player, still on the team. That's a lot of guys to rotate through. If Keldrick Falk hits, I think Jermaine Johnson's future is slightly up in the air, but I'm intrigued by what you think of this, Justin. So, when you look at a dominant pass rush unit in the NFL, most of the time, it's anchored by one edge rusher who commands double teams, who you have to know where he is on every single snap. You're always chipping him with a back or a tight end. You're running right at him. You're play actioning away from him. You're doing everything you can to mess with this one edge rusher, right? Miles Garrett, Max Crosby, Micah Parsons, TJ Watt when he's healthy. Like, this level of player gets schemed against, and I don't want to say can get taken out of the game, but that anchor player is like the premier player for most dominant pass rushes. And then you have ancillary pieces. And when that guy's commanding a double team, when TJ Watt's commanding a double team, here comes Alex Highsmith dominating the one-on-one tackle rep that he gets and blowing up your quarterback, right? So it's built on this sort of one dominant player and other guys that you can really count on. The Seahawks were built less on one dominant player and more on a bunch of really good players, including DeMarcus Lawrence, who was a dominant player, but now at this stage of his career, not so much anymore. I think the Titans are building that type of unit, but differently, because with this roster build, the Titans are not going to have that premier dominant edge rusher. They don't even need to look for it. Now, if Jermaine Johnson plays healthy and plays well this year and you bring him back, you've got a future that looks like Jermaine Johnson as your premier edge, Keldrick Falk and Femi Oladejo, pecking order to be determined, as your edge two and edge three. Hopefully both those guys develop into starting level players and you actually have that. And then you need a fourth edge rusher guy that can rotate in and out. I think Jacob Martin is on a 2-year deal, so maybe next year it's him. Maybe it's somebody else. Who knows? But you're not adding another premier $40 million or future $40 million a year edge, Myles Garrett level, TJ Watt level, Micah Parsons level. Like, you're not looking for that guy in the first round next year anymore, even if you don't have that guy, because the Titans are building a pass rush by committee at the edge position, anchored around one dominant pass rusher who commands double teams. It's just not on the edge. So this idea that the Titans, they don't have that premier edge, so they can't have a great pass rush. They have a premier pass rushing defensive tackle, the best defensive tackle in football last year, according to the AP All-Pro voting ballot. Continuing his ascent, now coached by Robert Saleh, with Aaron Weinkotten as defensive as his position coach. He's poised to take another step, playing with John Franklin Myers on the inside. Poised to take another step. John Franklin Myers commands double teams. John Franklin Myers can beat one-on-ones. So I think it's a really interesting approach here. It's the traditional thing. You build around one dominant pass rusher with a bunch of guys that you're going to rotate through that you feel they can win enough one-on-ones to really create pressure and wreck a game. They're just not doing it at the edge spot. They already have that guy. He's a defensive tackle. So they've beefed up this edge by committee rotation where, again, like, it doesn't fit now to add a Micah Parsons level prospect. Like, if they suck again and they're picking top five next year, you don't take Colin Simmons because, I mean, you could. I don't know. Maybe you do. Maybe he's that. I don't know. Maybe you just have the best pass rush unit in football then. But my point is you don't need to in order to create a pass rush. You've built this thing the way most teams do. You've just swapped your defensive tackle with your edge, and that defensive tackle is the premier rusher on the team.
Yeah, I get what you're putting down. I would have stopped short, like you said. Like, I wouldn't say with certainty that they definitely don't go edge in the first round next year. I think it depends how Jermaine Johnson does. It depends where they're picking and how the board falls. But I agree that there are some, you know, there's a lot TBD, right? Like, a lot depends on how Oladejo develops, what Keldrick Falk offers them in the first year. But I am liking the makeup of this group right now. Like, I imagine Keldrick Falk's going to come in here and be a pretty good run defender right away. Like, I really do expect that. Jeffrey Simmons is a good run defender. We've heard Robert Saleh say in an old clip, John Franklin Myers erases the run on his side of the ball when he plays outside. So they've got some good run defenders on this line right now, right? They've got at least one good linebacker in Cedric Gray who racks up tackles, plays the run well. If this team could stop the run, and you can say this about almost any team, to be fair, but if they can stop the run at the level that they might be capable of stopping the run, even though I don't think they have a premier edge guy, they've got a premier D tackle, as you said. If you can get teams consistently in third and seven, you know, because they can't run the ball on you, I think a defensive line made up of Jeffrey Simmons, John Franklin Myers, Jermaine Johnson, and Keldrick Falk, those four guys can play on the field at the same time. If they can stop the run and get you on third and seven, I think they are going to win and get home a bunch. And we know the way Robert Saleh likes to rotate D linemen. So if you add in a Jacob Morin, who was, I did my really underrated in Washington last year. We know Robert Saleh's got a certain comfort level with Solomon Thomas and Jordan Elliott because he coached both of them last year. I didn't even mention Femi Oladejo. That's the eighth or ninth guy that I've mentioned in that room. And Jalen Harrell's the ninth or tenth guy. Yeah, I think this pass rush is not only do you have a premier talent in Jeffrey Simmons. The other thing I like, when you got teams into third and seven, a lot of it is also motor. Right? Like, if they're holding the third and seven, third and eight, secondary has a bit more time to hold up on the back end. You've got to want to get home sometimes. And guys like Jeffrey Simmons, John Franklin Myers, all of them, Jermaine Johnson, Jacob Martin, Keldrick Falk, the motor that they play and defend with, I think they've got a lot of ability to get home on third and long. And I think they're set up to get teams into third and long because of the way that those guys stop the run.
I agree, Justin. I think that will cover us for now on the day one picks. We'll get back into this, you know, in the coming weeks. We have a long off season. We can break down a lot of film on these guys. Let's talk about day two, starting with this comment from Hunter10. Oh my goodness gracious.
What a transition. I surprised him by putting the comment on the screen that he wasn't caught off guard, folks.
We're on the same wavelength. Hunter Tenla asks, how late can we wait to draft interior O-line and grab a starter? Slightly concerned without a fourth-round pick. If the third-round pick isn't one, a.k.a. isn't an interior offensive lineman, Zeitler may really be coming back. Well, they may really need him to. I think there's a... I'm going to pair this with a comment that came in a little before that. From G. Suk-J. DeKid. We need to trade up to draft... We need to trade up to draft Pregnon in the second. Trade Levis, 69th pick, 5th round pick, to move up in the second round. Justin, would you make that deal? Is that an overpay? I don't know if that's an overpay. That might be an accurate. I mean, throwing Levis and the 5th rounder.
I think I strongly consider it because of the how good, how much I like Pregnon and the second round. Now the hole that you have, right, on the O-line, and that you might not be picking any of those guys at 69, maybe we can transition to that conversation if you don't mind, because at 69, they are in a weird spot here that, and I'm going to answer this question from Atlas. You can, yeah, it's essentially what I'm answering now. Very similar, right? They're in this weird spot here where it's like, I don't know that Emmanuel Pregnon or Chase Besantis make it to 69. I kind of guess they don't, right? Like more than likely they don't. I did see a mock this morning, Sports Illustrated, where I think Pregnon was like the 60 or 61st pick. So like, no, there's, listen, I don't want to get into that. I can get long-winded. There's a lot of edges on the board to start the second round. There's a lot of corners. I think those positions are going to fly off the board. I don't think O-line is going to fly off the board to start the second here. But if those guys don't make it to 69, Pregnon or Besantis, I don't know that I like anybody there. At, like someone mentioned Jennings Dunker. I could see that. I could see that. I really like, to answer Alice's question with this, my top three centers, I really like Sam Heck. I really like Logan Jones. And I like Jake Slaughter. The thing that I have with this, to be blunt with you, all of those guys are centers. They are center-only prospects. They are not guards. They are not going to play guard. Well, we don't know what's happening with Kevin Zeitler. I mean, they might know. We don't. If Kevin Zeitler's not coming back, or if I have any concern or question that he's not coming back, I'm way more interested in addressing guard than I am center. Maybe that's a weird thing to say, but like, I can get to a point where, you know, Schlottman and Slater are competing at center. I feel better about that competition than I do about Cordell Volson at right guard. So I'm going into this saying I've got to address right guard before I address center. But they're in this weird spot where I think the center depth is so much better than the guard depth. That's not what I meant. The prospects, I just needed to take a second there. I think the guard prospects available are way better than the center prospects available. I think way highly of Besantis and Pregnon than I do of the centers. So, and I want to address guard. So I am worried about what's going to be there for them on the interior at 69. I'm not, if those guys are not on the board, Pregnon and Besantis at 69, I wonder if they skip out on interior there. I'm actually thinking it's likely.
I just ran a simulation here on PFF's mock draft simulator, which if anyone's interested, you can start at round two with the actual round one picks filled in and do your own mock draft. And just seeing where some of these interior line guys came off the board in this mock, Pregnon went 43rd to the Dolphins, Besantis 46th to the Bucks. That's a far way to trade up from 69, but I do think if one of these guys is sitting there, Jennings Dunker, 59, Caleb Tiernan, a tackle, 64, could kick inside. And here we are on the clock at 69. And
you know what I mean? I kept tripping over my words, but like the interior, the guard specifically, I don't think there's going to be value there at 69. Now, they might wait till round five. We've had a couple names I was going to mention thrown into the chat. Maybe it's a Jalen Farmer in round five at guard. Maybe it's a Bo Stevens in round five. Maybe it's a Jaeger Burton, you know, who I've talked about a lot on this channel as well DJ in Campbell. Round five or six. I don't know that they're going to be able to find the value for interior at 69. Because if Besantis and Pregnon are off the board, the better interior prospects might be the centers. Sam Heck, again, Logan Jones, Brian Parker, like Connor Liu, Jake Slaughter. All those guys are centers only. Brian Parker, I mentioned, I think. So it's like, are they worried enough about center to go center at 69? I think they're worried more about guard, and the value might not line up at 69 for a right guard.
Oh my goodness gracious. I totally agree with that. I think that you're looking at, most likely, based on the way the board's going to fall, a linebacker, a safety, a corner, or even possibly a tight end there.
I'm all over that with you. I was going to say that. If I had to predict right now, and I don't know what our plans are tonight, we can talk about that later, Graver, but if I had to predict right now, I'm looking at the nickel corner spot where there are three names: Keontae Scott, D'Angelo Pons, and Trayden Stukes. All three are really good instant starters at nickel corner. And I look at linebacker, and I said this yesterday, the run on linebackers happens in this range: Jacob Rodriguez, Jake Golday, Anthony Hill, the Pittsburgh kid, Kyle Lewis. I look at those seven players specifically, linebacker and nickel corner, and I really start to wonder if that's where the Titans are going at 69.
Yeah, we got a question from Woodrin the Pootie on a $2 super chat. Can they get into the second without a future pick?
I don't think
that's,
I would
tough.
Say no. I would guess.
I think they'd have to give up their third rounder this year, and somebody would have to want Levis, and they'd probably have to throw in one or two more picks. But I mean, if you guys have played around with, like, you know, the underdog mock draft builder thing or anything, where you can like start negotiating trades and it shows you the point value of these picks, like, when you get into the fifth round, you know, picks in the second round that are worth in the hundreds of points, you get to the fifth round, they're worth like 17 points per pick. Like, you have to package so many together to get to that value if teams are sticking to that value. So that's tough.
I talked about some nickel corners, right, that could play it. But Ray School's got some great points here with the safeties who could play nickel. You mentioned safety, as well, Graver. AJ Halsey, Genesis Smith, two really good callouts. I also really like Jalen Kilgore from South Carolina. I think he's a really good nickel, you know, safety hybrid. Bud Clark, same thing with Kamari Ramsey, USC. Like, there's a lot of safeties in this class that could play nickel. No, Alex, you're wrong on this. Isn't Flott going to play nickel? Absolutely not. Flott is a boundary corner all day long. He's got outside size, outside measurables. He's definitely not playing nickel. He's going to start outside opposite Alante Taylor. Right now, we're guessing the nickel, not guessing, the only nickel corner they really have on the roster is Marcus Harris. So Cordell Flott is an outside corner for sure.
And another position they could definitely look at here. First of all, if I was Mike Bergonzi, and this is how the second round goes, and this is who's sitting here, I'm taking Kyle Lewis all day long. I'm skipping to the podium with a huge smile on my face. I love Kyle Lewis. I love his movement skills, his ability to cover and play the run. Like, this guy is a playmaking linebacker who I'm all over him as like the potential
Because you don't linebacker. Even know this, Graver, can I read you two interesting answers that Kyle Lewis told me on an interview that published this morning on NFL Draft on SI? I literally published this thing 2 hours ago. I asked him about the position that he's going to play at the next level. Where do they see you playing? I'm hearing weak side linebacker more than anything. That's been the most common answer I've gotten. A couple of teams see me playing nickel. Some of them see me doing everything. Weak side linebacker, dime packages, linebacker, nickel. And there have been a handful of teams that see me playing nickel and strong safety. I then asked him about his private visits. I completed a handful of visits, 4 to 6, he told me. But I'm going to keep the details private. I'm not telling anyone where I went. It was a solid handful of visits. Then I met another 2025 through Zoom.
Interesting. I think he's firmly on the Titans' radar. So if I was making the pick, that's who I would pick. I could also hear an argument for Mike Washington Jr. at this spot and just continue to load up on playmakers.
Someone asked in the comments, would you hate Mike Washington? Why would we hate it? We thought they were going to go linebacker at 4. If they want to go linebacker at 69, I still think it might be a bit of a weakness this year. I'm not going to change my tune. I think they are average with Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears.
Wait,
so
you're saying linebacker. You're trying to say
running back. Sorry, I'm clearly trying to say running back. I think they're average at running back with Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears. I think it's very possible that they consider Mike Washington at 69.
I do too. I mean, this guy is an explosive player. I think he's more of a two-down player. I think he has some limitations. He has a huge fumbling issue that he's got to fix, but you know, that's something you can correct in the pros. I don't think he's the best pass protector. He's not a going to run routes out of the backfield the way Jeremiah Love was doing it.
Because
he's an explosive play machine. I mean, 4.3 3.40 doesn't lie.
I really like Kyle Lewis a lot too, but I'll say this. I have fallen in love and been burned by those types before where they're like too small to play linebacker, so they might play safety, nickel corner, whatever. I love him a lot, but if I had a choice to take D'Angelo Pons, Keontae Scott, or Trayden Stukes ahead of him, I would, because it's just such a more clean evaluation. I know those guys are nickel corners. I know they're really good at it. They're flat-out playmakers. And I might include, by the way, I might include one of those safeties that could play it, like A.J. Halsey or Jalen Kilgore. I would maybe think about that, too, at 69.
Look at this explosive testing for Kyle Lewis. 75 percentile.
You better test cone. Explosive when you're that small.
75 percentile three cone, 95 percentile broad jump, 92 percentile vertical jump, 89 percentile 40 yard dash, 1 percentile weight, 10 percentile height. But I mean, what was David Long? David Long wasn't much bigger than 6'2", 220, was he?
Yeah, but he wasn't a Robert Saleh and Mike Borgonzi guy.
I'm curious. Ooh-wee. David Long was 5'11", 227. Hey, if he can play inside linebacker in the NFL at his size, Kyle Lewis with this kind of athleticism can certainly do it as well. Whatever. We'll see what happens. I do think that they are going to go pure best player available because I don't think they have a need that they feel panicked that they have to address in the third round. I could see them moving up for one of those guards if they start to slip and they're like, okay, if it's 10 picks away, if it's 8 picks away, let's go get the guy. We're not going to sit around and wait for him to fall to us. If they don't, and those guys don't make it, we're talking about two guards, Besantis and Pregnon. Nobody else really worth it in this range. I agree with the comment I saw a few minutes ago that said, I don't think they take interior O-line until the fifth round.
I think it's very likely.
But they grab at least two. And I think that that is when you have, depending on what happens with their picks, when you got 3 5th rounders and 2 6th rounders, Saturday is going to be a very fun day for Titans fans. Friday night, they took all the fun out of Friday night when they traded up to 31, Justin. All right, before we go, I need to share something with our audience that I meant to hit a long time ago and totally forgot about. But this is a new drop on the board.
Cardinal Tate.
That's Robert Saleh. That's how he answered the phone, or how he began speaking to Carnell Tate when they handed him the phone when the Titans called Tate to say, hey, we're going to come pick you. You want to talk to coach? They hand Saleh the phone. He grabs it and he says,
Carnell Tate.
Just thought that was hilarious.
I laughed so much when I watched the video because I noticed it too. I go, that's hilarious.
So I pulled that, and here's what's going to happen, Justin. Anytime we're talking about Carnell Tate for any reason whatsoever, when it's like, oh man, the Titans on 3rd and 9, they needed to get a first down to keep the game alive. Cam Ward drops back. And who did he hit, Justin?
Cardinal Tate.
I'm going to abuse and abuse this. When it's August and we got Nissan Stadium training camp practice under the lights and all the fans are out there scrimmaging and it's like, dang, did you see the play that
Cardinal Tate
made when he went up and caught that pass? I'm going to overuse this one. So,
as you should
get ready for it, folks. Any final thoughts here on what could happen on day 3? Again, it's going to be pretty boring. You know what I'm really bummed about?
They're making a pick at 69. I'm excited about them making a pick at 69. They're going to get a good football
player. I am too,
player.
But that's like, you know, 2.5 hours, 3.5 hours into the proceedings tonight. True. As opposed to like being on the clock at 4 overall last night. And what I'm really bummed about is that they traded pick 101. Because wasn't it so fun last year to have the first pick of the 4th round? And like you have all night, Friday night, all morning, Saturday morning before it starts to be like, look at the board. Titans could take their pick of the remaining players here. They could go any direction. They control day 3. And you never want that ever again. I never want to be picking first in the 4th round ever again. Because that means you picked at the top of the draft and you rotated into the top of the 4th round. Unless they trade for the 4th round pick from the worst team in football, in which case, great, then you can pick first in the 4th round again. So I'm bummed that they gave away that chance this year when it's like, you hope the last time they will ever be in that position.
And they nailed that pick, by the way, with Shimmeray DK last year.
They did. Yes, we are picking, Titans are picking at number 69, which I must say is pretty nice. John calls him Carnal Tate because he's carnal. I don't know. That's kind of, I don't know. All right. I'm out of stuff to talk about. I can't wait to break down Carnal Tate more. I can't wait to break down Keldrick Falk more. Can't wait to see who the Titans take at pick 69. We appreciate everybody tuning in here. Justin, we had almost 450 people in this stream at one point. That is
there are still 420, 75 minutes in. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, we appreciate you guys. So thank you for hanging out with us. I'm not planning to be live tonight, Justin, but we can talk about it off air. And if we decide to go, we'll tweet it out. I need to talk to my fiance before I tell all of you that I will be here for that.
Stay tuned to the Twitter and to the notifications. Maybe we go on the board a couple minutes for the Titans at 69. We'll see. We don't know for sure. I've got a lot too, so Graver and I will talk about it. But we're super, super pumped.
And that's why you got to be subscribed to the channel. Make sure you like this stream if you haven't already. Send it to a friend. Comment on the actual video once the stream ends here in about 30 seconds. We appreciate all you guys. Hit that bell. Turn on notifications. So if we do decide to go live, you will get an alert about it and you will know and you can come join us. Until Monday when we do a full Titans draft recap breakdown. That's most likely going to be our next episode. Until then, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.